I know that we're not far off Christmas, but this morning I've felt led to Psalm 31. And so if you have your Bible with you, perhaps open up to Psalm 31. It takes us directly to the cross, reminds us so much more of Easter than it does of Christmas. It's Psalm 31, it's a psalm that was written by King David. It speaks of the distress that he's facing, but it also calls for praise unto God. And a psalm written by David, which was written for the director of music. And so this is meant to be a song that is to be sung that reflects the struggles of life and the praise that's due to the Lord. And so songs that are included in our worship can have difficult struggles or difficult words throughout those songs. This is a psalm that acknowledges that life is not all joy and celebration, but that although we may be going through some very tough times, could be distressful, could be times of even grief, we too can celebrate the goodness of God. And so David begins, "In you, O Lord, I put my trust. Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me in your righteousness." And although we later read words of great despair, he begins by declaring his trust in God. And again, although later on we read words that about his enemies, his adversaries, he asked that the Lord would deliver him in order that his shame would not give reason for others to doubt or bring down the name of the Lord. What he's asking is that the Lord protect his own reputation by delivering David. "In you I put my trust. Deliver me in your righteousness." And so I wonder, are we concerned about preserving the Lord's reputation? By the way that we live, are we concerned about the Lord's reputation? Are we even aware that the way that we live reflects upon the way that other people see and understand God? So the way that we live has an impact on God's reputation amongst those around about us. But as we think about David and his adulterous affair and arranging Uriah's death, but then his subsequent remorse, we now see a man who doesn't want to be ever in that place where he was before. He doesn't want to ever be in that place again. He's asking the Lord to protect him and keep him in a right relationship with the Lord such that he's not ashamed before the Lord. "Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me in your righteousness." And I wonder, is our love for the Lord as deep as David's love for the Lord? Is our love for the Lord deep enough or strong enough to ask the Lord to protect us from ourselves, our sin that brings shame upon us? "Lord, would you grant unto me a righteousness that delivers me? I don't want to be sinful. I don't want to be ashamed as a result of my sin." That's in effect what David's asking for. Is our love for the Lord to that same degree where we go, "I don't want to do that. I don't want to sin. I don't want to bring shame upon myself or the Lord." I think as Christians, we often struggle to really rest in the Lord. Why? Because we're constantly aware of our own weakness, our own sin. Our weaknesses and sins seem to just rear their ugly head before us constantly, and so we often carry around a sense of shame with us, and the devil wants us to remain under that weight, under that shame and guilt. But you and I are clothed in the righteousness of God. God wraps us in his robe of righteousness. Isaiah put it this way: I will rejoice greatly in the Lord, my soul will exult in my God, for he has clothed me with garments of salvation, he has wrapped me with a robe of righteousness. So that robe of righteousness means that God doesn't see us in all of our sin. But it doesn't mean that we're somehow perfect or without sin. God clothes us in his righteousness, and neither does it mean that God will perfect all of our weaknesses whilst we're still on earth. God teaches us through those weaknesses to depend upon him even more. As Paul heard the Lord say to him, "My grace is sufficient for you, Paul, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. In your weaknesses, depend upon me even more and let me deliver you through my righteousness." Paul says to put on the breastplate of righteousness. Similar language. A robe of righteousness. The breastplate of righteousness. And I think that we do that through prayer and through our quiet times, as we spend that with the Lord and we allow him to recreate us into his image. The more that we feed our relationship with God, the more that we'll be delivered from sin and shame. The more that you feed your relationship with God, the more likely he's able to deliver you from sin and shame. So feed your relationship with God. David then continues to plead before God, revealing how much he needs God and how his faith is in God and in God alone for God to deliver him in verses 2 to 4. "Turn your ear to me. Come quickly to my rescue. Be my rock and my refuge, a strong fortress to save me. Since you are my rock and my fortress, for the sake of your name, lead and guide me. Keep me free from the trap that is set for me, for you are my refuge." He's asking the Lord to come near, to hear. Would you turn your ear to me? Would you hear my prayer? Would you come close and hear my feeble request, for I am faltering? Would you come quickly to my rescue? I think there are times when we all feel absolutely helpless. Whatever we are facing, it's just too great. It's too great. If you haven't been through a time like that, it'll come. And all we can do is appeal to God. We don't even know how to pray in times like this. "Lord, I need you. Lord, would you help me? Would you hear my prayer? Would you see my distress?" We can get to that place of utter helplessness. Well, David moves from bringing his need to the Lord to placing his faith in God. And I hope you notice that little transition. "Be my rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me." And then he says, "Since you are. Since you are my rock and my fortress, lead and guide me. Keep me free from the trap that is set for me, for you are my refuge. I'm trusting you, God, to be for me who I believe you are." That's faith. I'm trusting you, God, to be who I believe that you are. Who you are, God. It's acknowledging that no matter how big the enemy, the battle, the struggle, or the fight might appear, how defeated and helpless we might be feeling, we're trusting in God to be that place of refuge and strength, that he will lead and guide and protect. But David doesn't just leave it there by expressing his faith in God, because it's easier to say the words. David then surrenders himself to the Lord. Verses 5 to 8. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Deliver me, Lord, my faithful God. I hate those who cling to worthless idols. As for me, I trust in the Lord. I'll be glad and rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction and you knew the anguish of my soul. You've not given me into the hands of the enemy, but have set my feet in a spacious place. I trust that, I don't know, the lights went on as soon as I began to read verse 5. Jesus quotes this psalm when he's hanging on the cross. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit, and he breathed his last, is recorded in Luke. The ultimate expression of surrender and of trust, and many a faithful servant of the Lord has uttered these words as they've moved from life to death to life. Into your hands I commit my spirit. The commentator Lang says, Jesus doesn't surrender his life despondingly to death for destruction, but with triumphant consciousness to the Father of resurrection. Jesus submits to the will of the Father, but he willingly surrenders with a triumphant hope, knowing that whatever God has planned for him next is best, and it's okay with him. This same degree of trust was also shown by Stephen in Acts 7. He too, as he was being stoned to death, he looked up into heaven and he saw Jesus. It's recorded, and he says, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit and do not hold this sin against them. Similar words to Jesus. Into your hands I commit my spirit. But these are not words reserved only for those who are facing death. David too is asking that he be delivered from his enemies and their snares, but at the same time he's surrendering himself to whatever God may have planned for him. He doesn't know what that is, but he's surrendering to that. He acknowledges that in the past the Lord has seen his affliction, his anguish of soul. He has delivered him into a spacious place. God's been faithful in the past. I can trust you, God, with my future, whatever that might mean. Now, often it's not until we find ourselves in a place where we are at our wit's end. We're feeling helpless. We're racked with worry and concern or fear, that we're almost forced into this place of surrender. I think that God desires that we might be in this place long before we're forced into it. Whatever our place in life, facing battles or not, God longs that we would have a steadfast, childlike faith that says, into your hands, into your care, into your plans. I'm trusting my whole being. I'm trusting you. Whatever lies ahead of me, my future is for you to control. When David says, I hate those who cling to worthless idols, he's finding another way just to express that his faith is in God and God alone. Never has he sought out other idols or gods. As for me, I trust in the Lord, I am glad, and I rejoice in the Lord. His hope Remember that he's writing a song that he wants other people to join in to and sing. His hope is that those who would join in the song will also agree with him and place their faith in God and God alone. It is God who sets our feet in places of safety and security, regardless of the enemy or the battle that lies before us. As a result of what occurred on Friday for Boyd, and I think of the Schuber family right now, speaking to Evelyn yesterday, and she said, whatever lies ahead, whatever's in the future for me, I know that God is with me. Whatever battle lies before us, God is with us. And Boyd at the moment is on life support. And it certainly doesn't look good in terms of the here and now. But God is with this family. David comes back to outline the battle that lays before him. And you can see in these words why Jesus chose to quote from this psalm as well. You can picture Jesus on the cross or Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane the night before thinking some of these words or saying them. Verse 9 to 13. And hear how desperate David's situation is. Be merciful to me, Lord. I am in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and body with grief. My life is consumed by anguish and my years by groaning. My strength fails because of my affliction and my bones grow weak because of all of my enemies. I'm the utter contempt of my neighbours and an object of dread to my closest friends. Those who see me on the street flee from me. I'm forgotten as though I were dead. I've become like broken pottery which was cast by the side of the street and people would just walk over it, trample it. For I hear many whispering, terror on every side. They conspire against me and plot to take my life. These are desperate times that David's facing. He's feeling overwhelmed. He's tired. He's had enough. He just wants to quit. He wants to throw in the towel. He's feeling alone, rejected, unsupported, discarded. The kingdom was surrounded by hostile neighbours. There were constant difficulties within the kingdom and demands were constantly placed upon him. Come on, King, sort this out, fix that. But Jesus and David found themselves in places where they're under attack from people. They're under control from other people. And no matter what stage of life we may be in, we are often under the control of others. When we're young, older people make the important decisions for us. In midlife, we may find ourselves under the authority or the direction of others. As older folk, we may be even being directed by our own children. And we might feel as though we have no say. Right through life, we can be under the control of other people. Like Jesus and like David, can we surrender ourselves into the Lord's hands? And if need be, appeal to the mercy of our Lord. Appeal to the mercy of God. In a similar way to Job, David describes his afflictions and they come upon him from every direction. They come upon him in physical, emotional, social and spiritual ways. He's under attack. And he says, be merciful to me, Lord. Don't give to me what I deserve, as sinful a man as I am. Unlike David, I think, when we appeal to the Lord for help and assistance, we don't tend to appeal for his mercy, because we often feel that we don't deserve the troubles that we're facing. As sinners living within a sinful world, we often feel that as followers of Jesus, that we somehow should be exempt from all of the troubles of the world. We forget that we're still sinners. We forget that we're still living in a sin-filled world. David begins in the place where we all need to start, asking for God's mercy. Mercy is not receiving what we deserve. And so when the troubles come our way, why shouldn't they? Again, we're sinners living in a sin-filled world. Why shouldn't troubles come our way? Why should we be exempt from trouble? And of course, the only place we can surrender to is to the mercy of God. Please be merciful to me, Lord. I'm in distress. Would you deliver me from that which I deserve? David says, only you can do that, God. Only you can extend mercy. David doesn't turn around and say, God, these are the problems, these are the difficulties, fix it, take it all away, make life good for me. He appeals to the Lord for mercy. He trusts himself into God's hands. Verses 14 to 16. But I trust in you, Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from the hands of my enemies, from those who pursue me. Let your face shine on your servant. Save me in your unfailing love. No matter whether he received mercy or not, no matter how great David's troubles were, he declared that he was going to trust in his God. Although he understood well the troubles that he's facing, he's not going to dwell on them, and he's not going to allow them to continue to overwhelm him. He knew that God was so much greater than the troubles that he was facing. In fact, he says, God holds my times in his hand. God holds me in his hand, and he holds my times in his hand. Not just the length of time that we're on this earth, our time, but our times, our situations. God holds all of that in his hands. It was God who was in control. And he's going to trust God and accordingly ask God to look favourably upon him. In a way, David was saying in this psalm, I will carry my cross. Are we prepared to carry our cross, whatever that might be? No matter what you are facing, do you truly believe that God is in control? Do you really believe that God is in control, that he holds you and your times in his hands? Or is he only in control if things are going well? God is much greater than whatever we're facing. Do you believe that? God is much greater than the troubles that come our way in life. Do you believe that God does look upon you with favour? I'd love to change the words of one of the songs that we sang earlier, and that's that goodness of God. It's a great song. But I'd love to change one word from his goodness is running after me to flowing over me. Because he does, he looks upon us with favour. David then goes on with the rest of the psalm to express his personal praise for the Lord. And he asks in the rest of the psalm for others to join him in praising God. encourage you to read the rest of the psalm. But as we move toward Christmas, it's a time of great celebration. The reality is that we all face struggles, and some of you may be going through some really difficult and tough battles right now. Christmas itself can be a struggle for some. Can I encourage you just to surrender? Surrender yourself, surrender your situation, surrender your fears and anxieties. Surrender your future into the hands of the Lord. Trust him that he is in control. Into your hands, Lord, I commit my spirit, for my times are in your hands. Regardless of whatever I face, regardless of whatever the result, I'm trusting you. If you remember the teenager Mary, the angel came to her and said, Mary, you're going to have a baby. And I imagine Mary freaking out. What? I'm just a teenager. Thanks, but no thanks. The community's going to stone me. May it be to me as you have said, she said. Surrendered the future, whatever that might look like, as scary as it was, into God's hands. Jesus, Mary, David, show us today and invite us to surrender everything to the Lord.